Let me tell you about a leg that never got flown the way it was planned. Nice airplane. A Cessna 172, full of gas at the departure ramp, 4 tanks of fuel in a 2-tank airplane if you count the pilot's confidence. The plan was simple, 3 hours of flying, and the book said 4 hours of fuel in the tanks, plenty. Everybody figured it was plenty. Then the wind didn't cooperate. Then there was a little vectoring around some weather. Then the destination had traffic, and the pilot got sent around the pattern one extra time, and somewhere on that last 10 miles, in the flare over the numbers, the engine got very, very quiet. That airplane had fuel when it left. It just didn't have enough of the right kind of planning. This is radio hangar. I'm pattern, and this is traffic pattern. The show where we try to make you a sharper, safer pilot, one topic at a time. Today we are going to talk about the least glamorous number on your whole cross-country planning sheet, the Fuel Reserve Federal Aviation Regulation 9151. And I promise you, by the end of this, you are going to plan fuel differently on your next flight. Before we dig in, let me say a quick word about some friends of the show. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial? They've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, the ones you worked hard for. aviationsoul.com. Okay, let's walk through this together. Here's the regulation in plain English. Federal Aviation Regulation 91.151 covers fuel requirements for flight under visual flight rules. It says you may not begin a flight unless, considering wind and forecast weather conditions, you have enough fuel to fly to your first point of intended landing, and, from there, to fly after that for at least 30 minutes in the daytime and at least 45 minutes at night, that's at normal cruising speed. Read that again in your head, to your destination, plus 30 minutes in the day, to your destination, plus 45 at night. Now here's the first thing I wish someone had told me when I was training. That reserve is a legal minimum. It is not a plan. It is the floor of a hole you do not want to be standing at the bottom of. Think about what 30 minutes actually is. In most training airplanes, 30 minutes of fuel is somewhere around 4 to 5 gallons. That is not a comfort cushion. That is the fuel that is sloshing around the bottom of the tank while your fuel gauge needle is bouncing on the peg and your stomach is somewhere up around your ears. Legal and safe are not the same word. The regulation is where the Federal Aviation Administration draws the line for enforcement. Where you draw your own line should be well above it, so let's build a real fuel plan. Not a legal minimum, a real one. Start with what the airplane actually burns, not what the brochure says, not what your buddy told you at the flight school barbecue. What your airplane, at your power setting, at your altitude, actually burns. You get this from the pilot's operating handbook, the performance section, and here's the honest truth about those numbers. They were flown by a test pilot in a brand new airplane with a perfectly leaned mixture on a standard day. Your airplane is older, your mixture technique is a work in progress, and the day is almost never standard. So take the book number and add to it. A lot of instructors, myself included, will tell you to plan your cruise burn a little richer, a little higher than the book, just to give yourself margin. If the book says 8 gallons an hour, plan on 9. That extra gallon an hour is money in the bank you hope you never spend. Now, here's the part students skip, and it is the part that bites. You don't just burn fuel in cruise, you burn a whole bunch of it in the climb. Let's break the flight into its real pieces. There is the start, the taxi and the run-up, sitting on the ground with the engine turning. There is the takeoff and the climb to altitude, where the throttle is wide open and the mixture is rich, and you're drinking fuel at the highest rate of the whole flight. There is the cruise, there is the descent where you get a little back, and then there's the approach and any time spent maneuvering to land. The climb is the sneaky one. Climbing to 8,500 feet on a cross-country might take you 15 or 20 minutes at full power, and you're burning at a much higher rate the whole way up while making relatively little forward progress across the ground. If you plan the entire flight at your cruise burn rate, you have already lied to yourself before you left the pattern. So account for the climb separately. The performance section of your handbook has a fuel-to-climb chart. Use it. It'll tell you the gallons, the time, and the distance it takes to get up to your cruising altitude. Add that to your cruise burn. Add taxi fuel. Now you have a number that resembles the truth. Let's put some numbers to it so this isn't just theory. Say you're flying a trip that's 240 nautical miles, your planned true airspeed is 120 knots. Sounds like a 2-hour flight, right? 240 divided by 120 is 2 hours. Easy. But wait, you've got a headwind. Let's say a 20-knot headwind on the nose for most of the route. Your ground speed isn't 120, it's 100. Now that same 240 miles takes you 2 hours and 24 minutes. That headwind just added almost half an hour to your flight and half an hour of fuel to your burn. And it did it quietly while you weren't looking because the airplane still feels like it's doing 120 on the airspeed indicator. This is why the regulation says, considering wind and forecast weather conditions, the wind is not a detail on a long leg. The wind is the whole ball game. So run the real numbers. 2 hours and 24 minutes of cruise, plus the climb, plus taxi. If you're burning 9 gallons an hour in cruise, that's roughly 22 gallons for the cruise portion alone. Add 3 gallons for the climb, add 1 gallon for start and taxi. You're at 26 gallons before you've reserved a single drop. Now add your reserve, and here's where I want you to stop thinking like the regulation and start thinking like a pilot who wants to grow old. The reg says 30 minutes in the day. I want you to plan on 1 hour, 60 minutes. In our example airplane, that's about 9 gallons. 26 plus 9 is 35 gallons. If your usable fuel is, say, 38 gallons, congratulations. You can make this trip with a real margin. If your usable fuel is 36 gallons, you can technically make it, but you're eating into your comfort. And if the headwind is worse than forecast, you are now planning a fuel stop, and that's a good thing, not a failure. That decision right there at the kitchen table is the entire game. Fuel exhaustion accidents are almost never caused by something that breaks. They're caused by a decision that got made or didn't get made before the engine ever started. Let me give you a few habits that turn this from a formula into a skill. First, know your airplane's usable fuel. Not total fuel. There is a difference, and it is written right in the handbook. Total fuel includes fuel that sits below the pickup point and cannot feed the engine. Usable fuel is what you actually get to burn. Plan with the usable number, always. That difference has killed people who did the math perfectly using the wrong figure. Second, trust the clock more than the gauges. Fuel gauges in light airplanes are, to put it kindly, mood rings. The regulation only requires them to be accurate when they read empty. Let that sink in. The one time your fuel gauge is guaranteed to be right is the one time it is too late to matter. So the real instrument for fuel management is the clock and your fuel burn plan. You know you took off with, say, 38 gallons. You know you're burning 9 an hour. You started your watch at takeoff. That tells you your fuel state far more reliably than the needle bouncing on the panel. Third, set a hard number and honor it. Before you fly, decide the fuel quantity at which you will land, no matter what. Not the quantity where you start thinking about it. The quantity where the wheels touch down somewhere, say it out loud. Write it on your kneeboard. When you get there, you land. This is how you beat the thing that gets pilots killed on cross-countries, and you know the one I mean. Get there-itis, the little voice that says the destination is only 20 more miles, you can make it. That voice does not know how much fuel is in your tank. The clock does. Fourth, lean the mixture and know how. All those book numbers assume a properly leaned engine. If you climb to altitude and leave the mixture full rich, because that's where it was on takeoff, you're pouring fuel out the exhaust and your careful plan is now fiction. Learn to lean for your airplane. Ask your instructor to walk you through it at altitude. It is one of the most direct ways you have to make your fuel plan come true. Now let's talk about the check ride, because this shows up and it shows up hard. When you sit down for your practical test, the examiner is going to have you plan across country, and I promise you, they are going to look at your fuel planning. This lives right in the airman certification standards, under cross-country flight planning. The examiner is looking for a pilot who can compute the fuel required for the planned flight, who accounts for the wind, the climb, the taxi, and who applies the correct reserve. They want to see you know the difference between the legal reserve and a smart reserve. Here's a tip. Do not just write a single fuel number on your navigation log and hope they don't ask. Show your work. Talk it through. Say, here's my taxi fuel. Here is my climb fuel, here is my cruise burn, adjusted for this headwind, and here is my reserve, and I chose an hour instead of 30 minutes because I like sleeping at night. An examiner hears that and they relax, because they are sitting next to a pilot who thinks that is what they are actually testing, not whether you can run an E6B, whether you can be trusted with an airplane and the people in it. And if the examiner throws you a curveball, and they love this one, they'll say, okay, the winds came up stronger than forecast. You're 40 minutes behind your plan. What are you going to do? The answer they want to hear is not a heroic push to the destination. The answer is, I'm going to land here, at this airport, along my route, top off the tanks, and continue. A fuel stop is not an emergency. A fuel stop is a professional move. The pilots who divert early and land with fuel in the tanks are the ones who have long careers and grandchildren. Let me tie this back to where we started. That Cessna over the numbers with a quiet engine. Nothing on that airplane failed. The magnetos were fine, the engine was healthy. The pilots simply spent fuel they had counted on having, on wind and vectors and one extra trip around the pattern, and the plan had no room in it for the ordinary friction of a real flight. The margin was the first thing to go because there wasn't one. So here is what I want you to take to your next cross-country. Fuel planning is not the boring part you rush through to get to the fun part. It is the part that decides whether the fun part ends with a hamburger or a headline. Plan the climb. Plan the wind. Plan an hour of reserve, not 30 minutes. Fly the clock, not the gauge, and pick your landing fuel number before you ever leave the ground. Then honor it like your life depends on it, because now and then it will. Learning to fly is hard and it is expensive, and fuel is a big chunk of that expense. I know the temptation is to squeeze every leg for everything it's got. Resist it. The cheapest gallon of gas you will ever buy is the one still in your tank when you shut down. The regulation language today comes straight from Federal Aviation Regulation 91.51 and the planning standards from the Airman Certification Standards, and the rest comes from a lot of us who learned some of this. The uncomfortable way. You can find more at radiohanger.com. Go run the numbers on your next trip, honestly, and land with gas to spare. I'll see you back here in the pattern.